February 7th, there was a town hall meeting in St. Cloud. We have a Brooklyn Park committee hearing coming up. We have one in Minnetonka to serve the Southwest areas, and in Woodbury on March 7th.
And so, Senator Bonhoeff, I think we're going to add a sixth, very likely, in the Northeast Metro as well. So
very good. And so we do invite anybody who's in the audience to attend these when they're in your area and to continue to spread the word about that. And I will say also that so many interested parties have done a tremendous amount of work, including Margaret, who's sitting here with us, to make these happen. So it's important that we see that other cities, sister cities to us, have done a remarkable job attacking this transit problem. Cities such as Denver, you can see the pictures. This is now what their transit map looks like. Cities such as Phoenix, San Diego. We know Portland did it. So many other cities. How did they do it? They were very bold and aggressive, and they went to the taxpayers and they said, you know, we want to do this. They got their input, and then they put it on the ballot, and the taxpayers said yes. So there was public support. It was on the ballot initiative. And then the federal government matched those funds, and that's the critical link that we've been missing, that we are not taking advantage of those federal funds. And so I know this session that will be a priority for us, is putting together a plan that will allow us to get federal matching funds. So we can go through the details. You can I have handouts of that if you want to see what actually happened in these others, but the point is over $2.1 billion of additional annual funding has been raised in the last couple of years, and on average, these winning measures pass 2-1. What you are looking at right here is our transitway plan that if we, in an ideal world, could fund. This is what the seven-county metro area would look like. And I'd say this is not enough. You know, we should be looking at our high-speed rail to Duluth, rail to St. Cloud. It's just a beginning. 394, by the way, is red on this map, and that's because the department has viewed that line as a transitway because of the MinPass system. So today, we're here to look at one of the critical pieces. If we do envision having a metro area, a state, a seven-county region that is connected by rail, we cannot just assume that that 394 corridor has been taken care of with the MinPass system. We have to do the due diligence. I'm not here to say it's an absolute that this line must exist. I'm here to say we should at least do the research. It's too important of an artery to the Twin Cities to not study it. So today, this bill says that this 394 corridor will be studied as a potential for rail, whether it be light rail or high-speed rail, and that ultimately this rail could then connect up to BRTs, say on the 494 area, to connect to other systems. So with that, I would like to, if you see in your bill, what I'm advocating here is that the Met Council would study in partnership with the Center for Transportation and the Center for Changing Landscapes, would partner together in doing this study. And the reason why I actually named the Center for Changing Landscapes is because they are doing work right now in the region, and they're doing some pretty wonderful work. And so I have Mary Vogel here, who will tell you a little bit about that, and then some comments regarding the bill.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and the record, and please begin.
I'm Mary Vogel, co-director of the Center for Changing Landscapes, an interdisciplinary center at the University of Minnesota. Thank you, Senator Bonhoeff and the committee for this opportunity. I've been asked to participate in the study described in Senate File 189. On the screen is a sample of some of the work that we have done. The Center for Transportation Studies will also participate in the study. Bob Johns was not able to be here today, but he wanted to let you know that participation in this study would be a continuation of the partnership that the Center for Transportation Studies has had with the Metro Council. I believe he described that Metro growth project at his during his testimony in the larger Transportation Committee just a while ago. The Center for Transportation Studies has worked in other transit projects and is familiar with the issues in the proposed study area. Currently, in partnership with others, we are exploring the MinPass Phase 2 study that is looking at ways of improving transit and transit use in the I-394 corridor. This is a study that integrates transit service, highway design, community form, to identify strategies to make this corridor more transit-friendly and bus service more effective and attractive. This corridor is a post-World War II corridor in its essential form. That is, its form was driven by the needs of the automobile. And we are working with local communities, Metro Transit, Metro Council, MnDOT, and other consultants. We are analyzing the existing patterns of development and suggesting ways that this environment can evolve over time to support more transit use. Our work includes transit station locations and design, parking facilities, pedestrian, bike, road systems that improve access to the stations, and development patterns that will benefit from and support transit use. So here are the examples. What we do first is look at the regional issues. And that includes both the natural infrastructure of the West Metro region and the man-made ones. Do you want to switch? Then we bring it down to scale, to the district scale. Here are an example of some of the analysis that we've done both for Minnetonka and Golden Valley. You can see we're looking at land use patterns and system patterns. And then we bring it all the way down to the site. And what we're doing here is developing four different strategies for accommodating the expansion, the proposed expansion of the Ridgeknoll Mall to really make it a transit-oriented place. A commercial center that is south of 394 that is accessible and attractive to transit use because there are pedestrian systems and road systems and bicycle systems that access the transit station. So that's a sample of our work. We're in the preliminary stages. We are making these are two of four suggestions of how to reconfigure Ridgedale Mall area to the benefit of the city of Minnetonka.
And so, members, that's why when I learned of the work that Ms. Vogel is already doing, it seemed a natural synergy to take advantage of that along with the Center for Transportation to partner with the Met Council as we look at this particular study. And then finally, just to make sure people are aware, I know everybody knows how successful the Hiawatha Line has been, but some people say, you know, that already we're serving these people because they're using MinPass. But yet we have surveyed the users from the Hiawatha Light Rail Line, we have found that 50% of those people who are taking the Hiawatha Line said they have not taken advantage of other transit, that these are new users. And that they said, how would you get to work if the train was not available? 59% of them would drive alone in 2005. And they redid that survey, and again, 50% said they would drive alone. So we know that we would be taking significant amount of cars out of the congestion if we were to be able to do something like this. So it's time to say, what do we really want? How do we get it? And the important question, are we willing to pay for it? Whatever you can do or dream, you can begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. So that's what I'm an advocate for. And now I'd like to have Margaret just say a few words about this effort.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today in support of Senate File 189. We can see that as the metropolitan region grows, there continues to be increasing demand for an expanded transportation system. Congestion continues to be a huge livability issue in the metropolitan area, one that costs commuters in the Twin Cities over $700 per year in lost time and fuel. As a consequence, we are starting to see more and more demand for not only expanded highways, but new transit ways in the region. Unfortunately, our current vision for a transit network that would allow people to travel throughout the region by transit, as you saw on the slide, is not scheduled to be completed until 2030. So that means that residents will be waiting 23 years for this kind of a transit network in our metropolitan region. We believe that this plan needs to be completed sooner, and that other corridors that are not currently part of that plan for a possible rail line like 394 should be studied to determine the feasibility of whether or not that is an appropriate corridor for light rail. Obviously, with the success of the Hiawatha Light Rail Line, Minnesotans are looking for a bigger and more expanded transit network. And I think we saw that very clearly in November with the vote on the constitutional amendment, that people overwhelmingly do support improving our roads and transit system. A transit network will make the region much more competitive, as we've seen investments in other parts of the country. We need to make those kinds of investments as well to remain competitive. And at the same time, it would provide immediate high-quality jobs in construction, engineering, and related industries in our state. All of the transit ways, of course, that are part of the plan are very important. And the demand that we see in other parts of the region, again, demonstrates the need for a long-term, comprehensive transportation funding package that we think needs to be passed this session, so we can start to advance these projects that are already in the pipeline and study new ones as well. With that, I'm, again, very happy to be here to support this bill and to answer any questions that you might have.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. Any questions from the committee?
Okay.
Senator Bonoff, you have some additional witnesses?
Yes,
some
I do.
Local,
thank you. I'm happy to
officials.
Bring people from my cities that would be directly affected by this to the table. So Mayor, Council Member Hewitt, and Mayor Humphreys. Want to join us? Here, let's just
chair.
Add a chair. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Great.
Thanks.
Welcome to the committee.
Thanks.
So I have, we'll start over at this end with Mayor Humphrey from Wayzata, and I will say that I first met Mayor Humphrey because of I offered this bill last session, and Mayor Humphrey called me and said he wanted to discuss it because he saw this as being so important for the city that he's the mayor of, which is Wayzata. So we began a dialogue, and now I'm happy that you're able to join us here today.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mayor Humphrey.
Thank you, Senator Dibble and members of the committee. I'm honored to be here, and I'll just give a few brief remarks. I'm here, as Senator Bonoff indicated, to express strong support for this bill on behalf of the city of Wayzata, and emphasizing that it is a bill to study the viability of either the 394 corridor per se, or what I refer to as the Wayzata heavy rail corridor, which might be an extension. For those of you who have been in Wayzata, you'll know we have a heavy rail track that goes right down through Wayzata that's been there for many years. It was key to the formation of the city by James J. Hill. There actually is room for another track. We have two rail beds there, one of which was taken out 10-plus years ago. So we have, as a city council, been interested in studying whether or not it might be viable to use that corridor for commuter rail. And this bill would be perfect to do that. I am hopeful the study will show that it is viable, either there or generally in connection with 394. I am an advocate generally of rail transit if it can be shown to be viable, and I commend the committee to the slide I just saw that does show, I think, the reality that people view rail differently than bus. I happen to use the MinPass to get to my job, and I do not use the bus for the most part, but I would use rail. That's personal, but I think it probably is applicable to many people. The reasons, very briefly, I think you're all aware of it, environmental reasons, economic efficiency, congestion for looking at rail transit. And I think in the right corridor, it is absolutely critical to have as part of our regional transportation system. Lastly, there is some history here with Wayzata. Up until the early 70s, there was passenger train service into Wayzata. And that rail bed, by the way, goes extends far to the west. So the viability of this might, as part of a regional system, actually extend farther to the west as well. And many, many years ago, I am told that people in the Lake Minnetonka area would row their boats across Wayzata Bay to get to Wayzata to take some commuter rail or trolley into Minneapolis. So this is not something new. This is kind of a reclaiming of our history. So for all those reasons, I strongly support the bill, and I commend Senator Bonhoeff for initiating it.
Thank you, Mayor Humphrey. And I do want to draw members their attention. In the A3 amendment, we have specifically cited that it would be to study the feasibility. That says the corridor must be located in an area between a line 2 miles south of marked Interstate Highway 394 and marked Trunk Highway 55 on the north. And that was written so that we would include that particular commuter rail line that Mayor Humphrey's referring to. And I did meet with the BNSF Railroad, and they talked about the importance of having room for two lines. And this is the first I've heard that there is actually room for that. So that is good news.
And Senator Bonhoeff, and the terminus of the study area would be Wayzata.
Right. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. So we're not going to have personal rapid boat transit as a part of this?
Feel free, Mr. Chair.
I do know, just for the committee's information, that Mayor Humphrey talked about, extending much farther to the west. You know, there are folks out much farther, into the countryside to the west of us who are interested in being able at some point in the future to hop a train and get into the cities.
That would be wonderful.
Wilmer and beyond. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I'd like to introduce Councilmember Hewitt. And Councilmember Hewitt is not only a city council member in Plymouth, but also serves on the 494 task force. And I'll let you speak about
it. Okay. Welcome, Councilmember Hewitt.
Thanks. I'm chair of the Suburban Transit Authority. I'm also chair of the 494 Corridor Commission, and I'm also on TAP, the Transit Advisory Board that works with the Met Council. So I do have a pretty good background in transit and transportation within our area. We're really excited that Senator Bonhoeff is presenting this. We think it's important. If you looked at the map previously, Plymouth is kind of that black hole. We don't really have transit kind of in the future. So we're very supportive of transit in general and think it's a great idea. I'm here more as a cheerleader and supportive of this. So I think it's a great idea. It's a great idea to study it. And we as a city are very interested in participating in that and doing whatever we can. It wouldn't go directly within our city, but we are an opt-out community. So we would be willing to look at connecting to this. And so whatever we can do to help all our communities work together, we think it's important. And so that's why I'm very supportive of it.
Great.
Thank you, Councilmember.
Thank you, Councilmember.
And then to my right, I have the mayor of the city that I live in, Mayor of Minnetonka, Mayor Callison. And I'd let you speak.
Welcome, Mayor Callison.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bonhoeff. Thank you, Senator Dribble. And it's a pleasure to be here this afternoon and speak in support of this bill. There are three reasons why I hope that you will pass this. The first, and Senator Bonhoeff has already spoken to this, is because of the need for transportation and transit alternatives in our region. And one statistic that might help highlight that is that MnDOT predicts the number of miles of congested roadways will increase from 183 in 2000 to 491 in 2025. In 1971, the number of congested roadway miles was 10. I think that emphasizes the need for some additional options. In addition to that, there's growing support for transit, and again, that's already been mentioned. The I-394 corridor is well used with transit. That's one of the corridors where we have express bus service, and it's a heavily used option. So there's support for transit options in that area of the metro. In addition, in a 2002 survey done by C.J. Olson Research for the Southwest Rail Transit Study, 71% of those residents in the Southwest area supported the LRT. In open houses held in 2005 and 2006 for the Southwest Corridor analysis, nearly all the comments supported LRT as well. And LRT is something that the city of Minnetonka has been supportive of and active through its work on the Southwest Rail Corridor study. The third reason why I'm supporting this bill is that it takes a long time to make transit happen. There's an exceptionally long lead time. For the Southwest Transitway, which is now midstream in the planning process, discussions began in the early 1980s, which is more than 20 years ago. The Federal Transportation Administration requires a significant amount of planning work before a project is funded, including an alternatives analysis study, which takes about 2 years, an environmental impact statement, 2 to 3 years, preliminary engineering, 2 years, and final design, 2 to 3 years. This is after looking to see if the transitway is even feasible. In the Southwest Transitway analysis, the feasibility analysis took 2 years. So given all these factors, I believe studying the I-394 corridor for transit options is appropriate. Our first priority in Minnetonka is the Southwest corridor. However, the I-394 corridor also has been discussed for many, many years and deserves more study as a transitway. We strongly support improvements to the I-394 corridor for commuting and reverse commuting express transit service, and we would like very much to participate in further study of this corridor for rail transit service. And I thank you very much for considering this bill and the opportunity this afternoon.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee of our local officials? Senator Sieben.
Well, I just have a question about who passed this article out that we just received.
I think that came from Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I was...
Senator Olson, yeah.
I hadn't intended to have it distributed before I had a chance to explain why I was sharing it with you. But I do have a question before I get to that.
Senator Olson.
I really do appreciate your expanding that corridor because of the focus simply on the I-394 corridor and knowing all of the efforts that we have made to try to make that somewhat efficient and reduce the congestion on it with the existing capacity. If you were going to impose a light rail corridor on it, obviously you would have to take away existing capacity of a current form of transportation. And that has been somewhat of a negative on the Hiawatha corridor. That used to be a major road and a very nice route to get to the airport, and you'll find very few people that will use that anymore because its capacity has definitely been diminished. And to do that with I-394, I think would be a mistake. When you think about it, when you drive it, how in the world could you achieve that without totally incapacitating it for a long period of time and trying to get more land and so on? So I really do appreciate the fact that you are looking beyond that. And I'm also trying to figure out where that railroad, I know where it is in Wayzata, but, you know, when you're in the cars, sometimes I probably cross it a gazillion times, but where does that go to the east, and where does it enter Minneapolis?
It's south of 394.
Mayor Callison.
South of 394, north of Minnetonka Boulevard. I think it crosses Plymouth Road by the Burwell House.
Senator
North
Bono.
Of there a little bit.
Yes, Senator Olson, it's right in my neighborhood. You know, as your it goes through, as Mayor Callison said, if you turn on East McGinty, and then you go up East McGinty, the back way to Best Buy, you cross over those railroad tracks.
Okay.
Or even by St. David's School.
Yeah,
on
and then it
Road.
Keeps going behind St. David's School and goes all the way down by Penn Avenue, all the way into Minneapolis.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonner, where does it enter Minneapolis?
It enters Minneapolis right, and the rail bed is down by Penn Avenue and St. Louis Park by the Jewish Community Center, right behind them.
Okay. I think that is a very definitely a positive, because I think the one concern I have is that when we do consider this, that we do not take away capacity from existing
Senator Olson,
modes
I was,
of transportation.
Yes, when people first read my bill, people were very concerned that I was talking about putting light rail right on 394, and I am not an advocate of that because it would completely destroy for many years our traffic system. So I'm not an advocate for that, and that's why I did ask Ms. Berezovsky to redraft it. And also for Councilmember Hewitt, we still are studying all the way up to 55 in this approach, so it might very well end up in Plymouth.
Yep.
We don't know.
And Mr. Chairman, to answer Senator Sieben's question, a few months ago this paper was given to me. It was written by, and it's not signed by authorship, and I'm not sure if I have liberty. I have liberty to share it, but without necessarily identifying who it is, but it's somebody with a long history in transportation. I will say that, and if I can get clearance, I will tell you who it is. But it was kind of jarring to me because it forces one to take a bigger picture of how extensive our use of automobiles and the highway system is, and that we have close to 12 million passenger trips a day, and the amount of transit, even including the successful light rail, only is about 2% of that amount. And even if you double it, it's only 4%, and we still have 96% on our roads. That's why I'm concerned about not losing capacity, but also the investment in relation to, I think the study hopefully will get at that, and we'll look at it in terms of the whole transportation demand. I don't know if there's any modification of wording in it, but I think that would be helpful as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Olson. We'll look forward to reading the paper. Senator Sieben, you're looking at me like you want to talk.
I mean, I guess my point to, thank you, Mr. Chair, to Senator Olson is, if you want us to take this seriously, though, why can't the person sign their name to it? I don't think anyone on this committee would argue that we should abandon our transportation funding system, nor would Senator Bonhoeff, and that was the point of the clarification of her line. But, I think the point, or my point that I'm trying to make, is that we do need significant investment in transit options to help reduce congestion, but also to help reduce the rate of congestion. And I'm not sure that this really addresses that. And while it talks a lot about the costs of different transit lines, it also doesn't really go into the large amount of federal money that we're missing out on by not having a more comprehensive transit system in the metropolitan area.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I think is is part of the challenge, is that the Federal Transit Administration has been very narrow in their approach, and I think there was some discussion when the Assistant Secretary was here about the possibility of opening that to new technologies and recognizing other forms of transit and alternatives for the use of federal funds as well. So I think all I'm just saying is I think we need to broaden the dialogue as much as possible so that we can get the most return out of the dollars that we spend, because you know that everybody's after them and we have great challenges in it, and it isn't a bottomless pit, because I don't think people are going to be willing to turn over all of their earnings for all of the things that we might like to do. So I think that's why we need to be wise in the choice of expenditures we have. And that's, I think, studies like this are truly important in it. He took the figures from the article in the Star Tribune, so it's not something that was made up. The only one that was added to that was the passenger trips per day in the metropolitan area, and put a little different context to it.
So you heard it
and
here.
And he's not against transit or variety of forms of transit, if you read that carefully either.
So you heard it here. The Star Tribune never makes anything up. I don't want to get too far afield on this, because of course we can't read it right now. But I hear a lot in what both Senator Olson and Senator Sieben are saying. There's no one magic bullet in terms of transportation that will solve our mobility issues, and transportation in and of itself, isn't a means or an ends unto itself. That transportation coupled with our larger community and economic development goals are what we have to keep in mind, absent taking a look at our land use pattern policies and all kinds of things. It's similar to the education conversation. We can't solely discuss what's going on inside a school and get a complete handle on what we need to do around education. education exists in a much larger context. Transportation exists in a context as well, and we need to understand both its the outcomes that it causes as well as the outcomes that, we desire from our transportation investments. So with that, Senator Bonhoff, do you have anything further on this?
No, thank you very much. I move to lay this on the table.
All right. Senator Bonhoff moves to lay Senate File 189 as amended on the table. And by so saying, we'll lay Senate File 189 as amended on the table. Senator Bonhoff, I think you're next up as well with Senate File 190.
Thank you very much.
And I'll say goodbye to my guests. Thank you so much. Right. Well,
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I have a delete all amendment also for this, and excuse me, Ms. Berezovsky, I don't know the number of it.
It's A1, but it's not a delete all.
That's the A1 amendment, Senator Bonhoff. It's not a delete all.
Oh, thank you. I'm now offering the A1 amendment. It has some technical changes.
Great. Senator Bonhoff offers the A1 amendment. This is the Committee of Original Jurisdiction first hearing on this bill. Any questions on the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Amendment passes.
So, Senator members, Bonhoff. This won't take long. This bill is a bill which was introduced before the Transportation Committee last year. Would have, I think, been in the final bill had not our transportation bill fallen apart. So Senator Murphy was gracious enough to let me present it again as a standalone bill, keeping in mind that really the intent of this would be to be included in the overall transportation bill. What this bill does is, as everyone knows, we did a wonderful job and passed the MBEST on the ballot, and the MBEST collects the tax associated with buying new cars. And when I was first briefed on the MBEST, the question that I had for the Senate staff was, what happens if you lease a car? Because they were lamenting the fact that as new car sales have gone down, that in fact was not keeping up with their projections. And I know that often people who purchase, who like being in new cars, lease their cars because it's an economical way to do that. So when the question was asked, what happens if you lease your cars, we had not yet captured those funds. So that's what this bill does. It says that if you're leasing your car, the tax you pay would follow the same path as the proceeds collected with the MBEST are now following by constitutional amendment. And so I do have somebody from the Department of Transportation, the Kevin Gray, who's the CFO, to talk to us about what kind of money that entails. But first, I'd be happy to take any questions with regard to the intent.
So any questions from the committee? Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, the governor is supporting this as well, is it not?
Yes, he is.
Senator Bonner.
Yep. Senator Olson. The governor did include it with his bill.
Good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great. All right. Mr. Gray.
Senator.
Hello, Mr. Gray. Thank you for being here.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I was asked to come to comment on Senate File 190, and I do want to both reaffirm and clarify a comment by Senator Bonhoff. Indeed, the governor is supporting sales tax on motor vehicle leases, and that's good news. However, there is a modest or not so modest difference between the governor's recommendation and how the percentages are going to be applied with respect to the distribution between not the highway fund, where they're consistent, the 60%, but the 40% that is allocated between the Metropolitan Transit account and the Greater Minnesota Transit account. The governor's recommendation, which is allows both Greater Minnesota and the Metropolitan Transit to stay at current performance levels, is a 38%, 2% ultimately when the full sales tax is phased in. The Senator Bonner's bill is 35% going to the Metropolitan Transit account, ultimately after the five-year phase-in period, and 5% to Greater Minnesota Transit. Beyond that, the dollar amounts indeed are the same. And it's additional revenues, let me look at my notes here, estimated revenues ranging from $48 million in 2008 to approximately, $52 million in 2012 that are the fees or the revenues that would be expected to be coming into the transportation accounts over that period of time. So it's a significant amount of money, and indeed it is part of the governor's plan. And, again, the only critical difference is in the split within the 40% of the transit accounts.
And, Mr. Chair, just a comment on what Mr. Gray is reporting on. There are many people who are, in fact, advocating for that 38-2 split, and I think some of them are probably here today who may want to say something about that. The intent behind the 35-5 is really for this bill to mirror whatever the committee decides it wants to do in the final transportation bill. So the 35-5 is actually consistent with Senator Murphy's transportation bill, and I am open to whatever the will of the committee is as we discuss this in the broader funding package, and this is certainly not something that I would consider unfriendly later down the road if that is the will of the committee. I'm just, trying to make sure that what we have in this bill currently reflects the broader bill.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoeff. Yeah, and we will have a committee more discussion about that.
I don't believe
we're going to entertain, I don't know. You know, people are free to offer amendments. I don't know that amendments are going to be offered at this time today on this subject, but there will be a lot of conversation about this, and we can't, of course, have this 38-2, 35-5 conversation in a vacuum. Clearly, we're in this together, and we share a larger statewide issue around resources. So my advice to everyone in the room is not to get super anxious about this right
Thank
now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson. Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, yes, last Saturday we were in St. Cloud. We heard some strong support for keeping it at a 35-5 rather than the 38-2. There was a little angst out there about that kind of move, and one understands and appreciates those concerns and those needs as well. But and while I don't want to get parochial about this in terms of the leasing arrangement, do you have any idea of how much of that leasing revenue is generated in the metro area versus the whole state? Is there any way that that's tracked or can be tracked even? It isn't. Okay.
Mr. Chair, no, I don't believe we know what that split is. In fact, I think that we're working hard. We haven't formally split out the sales tax on motor vehicle leases, so there is a bit of a guesstimate, and I think it's a pretty informed estimate of what the total dollars will be. But I think we're looking to get that refinement first before we start splitting out between how much is leased where. So if that information is available, we'll certainly follow up on it, but I don't think it is at this point.
That would
Mr. Chair, it might be sometime in the future that you actually could determine that?
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I'd have to confirm with Departments of Finance and Revenue on that. I don't know how many stripes are going to take of this cut. But
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that is the most significant factor in terms of determining what that percentage is anyway, so don't spend a lot of money.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I actually had the same thought that I would like to know, and so I was actually planning to ask Ms. Berezovsky if she could help me with that, because I think it would be informational as we're looking at splitting up this pie that so many want. It'd be interesting to see where does the money come from. So I agree. It's a good question.
I concur. That would be interesting to the extent that we can get that information. Members, there is a fiscal note. Preliminary fiscal note at your places there, so you can look that over. Any questions at this point of Mr. Gray from the committee or Senator Bonhoeff? Okay, we have Judge Chetnin from Metropolitan Council, another agency that's affected by this bill, to share some wisdom with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Senator Bonhoeff. My name is Judd Chetnin. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. And I'd like to thank Senator Bonner for moving forward with this bill. Again, I think in light of what you're saying about let's not get too anxious, we're not going to get too anxious over the split. The governor obviously has the sales tax and leased vehicles split at 38-2 in his bill. And one of the primary reasons why he has that is in his bill to dedicate the sales tax on leased vehicles, he does that along with the phase-in of the MVEST money that is coming to transit due to the constitutional amendment. And with the with that money in the general fund and the sales tax on leased vehicle, we're able to basically maintain our budget. So that entire 38% with the governor's budget is necessary to maintain the current transit system levels that we have in the metropolitan area right now. And I know that we'll have a much broader discussion on that here in the future. But, again, we think that Senator Bonhoff is on the right track, and we want to thank her for moving forward with this. And we look forward to having a few more conversations with the committee here in the near future. So thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Shedden, if you could just refresh the committee under current forecasts, we have some operating deficits for Metro Transit. You can just remind us of those numbers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, just to wrap up the 07 fiscal year, the Metro Transit, Metropolitan Area Transit, has an $8 million shortfall that we are experiencing just due to the November forecast. On top of that, the new forecast that came out in November gave us a $23.2 million shortfall for the 08-09 budget year. So the sales tax on leased vehicles that the governor has proposed will allow us to cover the 08-09 shortfall, and then in the current wrapping up the fiscal year 07, we'll have a separate budget request to cover that. But the 38%, including the sales tax and leased vehicles, is absolutely necessary for us to just maintain the current system and service that we have on the streets today. So if you have, is that what you're looking
at? Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
just to clarify, this is not a new tax. That people who lease their cars are paying tax. This is so the governor did not propose a new tax.
Yeah, and this is a repurposing of an existing tax, similar to what we saw happen with the MVEST in the referendum last November. So, you know, maybe that gets us in trouble with Senator Berglund. I don't know. And I think something else to reflect on that Mr. Shetnin said was that it would merely allow us to operate the existing system. It doesn't get us on the path to genius power and magic that we heard about earlier.
That's very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Questions
Thank you.
From the committee for Mr. Shetnin. We have Jim Clark here from the Suburban Transit Providers. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. James Clark, Messaline Kramer, representing the Suburban Transit Association. Mr. Chair, I'll be brief. I just wanted to thank Senator Bonhoff for her leadership on this issue. And again, not just this year, but last year. And she was out there leading the way last year, and we appreciate it very, very much this year. Just remind the committee that currently in the metropolitan area, there are over two dozen park and rides that are at or over capacity. There are another four that are over 90% capacity. This will help with that. And again, we won't talk about any MVEST split, but appreciate the committee's willingness to look at that as we move forward. And again, like to thank Senator Bonhoff for her leadership on this issue.
Great. Thanks. Any questions for Mr. Clark? I almost referred to him as we used to refer to him. You know, whenever you were at the witness table when I served with you on the Transportation Committee in the House, you always had Clark bars for everyone. Have you been released from that
Chair,
obligation?
Mr. Chair, duly noted. I don't think I can do that any longer.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Well, they're not worth $5. So. All right. Any questions from Mr. Clark? No. Okay. Representative Jungbar. Or Senator Chungbar,
wow.
Excuse me. No, I'm back in the House here.
We're slipping back.
Well, I was just going to get a clarification from Mr. Clark if he belonged to that same Messerly and Kramer that was the evil people that were on the news last night for representing local cities and counties and stuff. So
we don't watch that. We don't watch that TV station, so I don't know anything about that. So
thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't either.
All right. Okay, and we have. Oh, I'm sorry.
We just have to have some levity on the meeting.
Yes, indeed. We have Sarah Erickson from Metro Cities. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Sarah Erickson. I represent 86 cities in the 7-county metro area. We wanted to thank Senator Bonoff for bringing this forward again this year. Any money we can get in the transportation arena, we greatly appreciate. I realize that the issue with the split at 35-5 will be taken care of in the bigger finance committee. We just have some concerns with that, and we just wanted to go on record. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Erickson. Any questions for Ms. Erickson? No. Okay. Anything further, Senator Bonoff?
No.
All right. Do you have a motion? Not that we vote on it, but for the record.
To lay, I move that we lay Senate file 190.
As amended.
As amended on the table.
Senate file 190 as amended is on the table. Okay, next we have Senator Rest. On Senate file 228. Welcome, Senator Rest.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate file 228. I do have a, I believe, an author's amendment.
Yes, the A1 amendment.
Amendment. What that does, by the way, is puts back into the statute some language that was inadvertently removed in the drafting of this bill, and it places it in a more appropriate section of the statute. So it's not new language. It's just moving language when we discovered that it had been inadvertently struck.
Great. So this is the first hearing for this bill in its committee of origin. Does anyone have any questions about the A1 amendment? Nope. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Passes. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the November forecast came out, and we were told that we had $1 billion of one-time money and $2 billion of permanent money, but that was unadjusted for inflation, and people became more and more confused about, it seemed to me at least, and in my own mind, about what dollars were available to be invested or spent or appropriated, whatever word you'd like to use, that one of the problems when we have fluctuating one-time dollars is that, or a challenge of it was that we were very, very limited in the ways in which we could use those dollars, and that since they were not sustainable. And so the question then occurred to me, well, is there a way of making one-time dollars sustainable? And the at least one answer is not a it's not really a new idea within state government, but it was a new idea for me in terms of meeting transportation needs, and that is to take a portion of the one-time money, and the number I chose was $250 million, which is 25% of it, approximately. We don't know what it will be with the February forecast, and to set that up in a separate endowment fund to then spend the investment proceeds, a return on the investment for transportation. And directing it through the general formulas that we have, including the new, since it's new money, the new CASA formula that we've been talking about. And then also, and there's a 37-3 MVEST split, which I think is, you know, an irrelevant discussion because that will be decided whatever we do in a later bill, whether this idea is included or not. But then that we anticipate one-time surpluses in the future and find a way to commit those dollars within this legislation. So At the end of the bill, there is a provision that states that 25% of any additional of any one-time surplus money in future bienniums would also be treated the same way, and kind of stand first in line after we have filled up the reserve levels to the extent that we need those for that are already in statute, and that it come before a recommendation that the governor would need to make regarding one-time rebates. It's a program, quite frankly, that I would recommend that the legislature looks at for other areas that are underfunded, when we don't just want to take the one-time money and say, okay, what are the one-time projects that are out there, and that we're limited in what we are thinking about with regard to spending, that there's a pot of money that you can use for one-time projects, and you can't think about ongoing funding in any of our other obligations. We do not have to be satisfied with that. And even if we assume a very low return, 5%, 5% on $250 million is only 12.5%. However, as the corpus itself would grow in the market, those dollars would be increased from year to year. And also, if we committed 25% of surpluses in the future to be used in a similar way, there's an opportunity for that that endowment fund to grow, and perhaps even at some point the interest assumption could be increased. The small amount of dollars that would be in the first year that would be coming back, and I see the fiscal note is like 11.8, so close to $12 million. Again, doesn't seem like very much money in the general scheme of things for funding transportation projects, including transit. Nevertheless, when we're talking about repairs one place or another, or being able to really get over the hump for a new park and ride or repairing a park and ride, sometimes $12 million is the difference between a project being able to be completed and one that has to go by the by. So I offer this as a suggestion for an approach that does not involve any tax increases whatsoever, that is a responsible way of putting dollars in the bank to be a sustaining fund for transportation, and hope that it has some appeal to members as a way of approaching one-time money, but not being constricted by just a group of items that are called one-time expenditures. We do not have to be restricted to that in the way in which we approach the one-time surpluses to translate that into, or transform it, I would say, into a sustainable source of funding for in this instance, transportation. And, Mr. Chairman, it's an idea I have, and I offer it to the subcommittee, and I don't have any witnesses.
Great. Questions from the committee? Senator Bonham.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I just think it's a great idea that it really does allow some sustainability from those windfalls. And, you know, we do get those windfalls, and they're actually different in every case, but on a regular basis, we do have them. And so this would allow us to take some of our most important priorities and let those assets grow over time to begin to fulfill some of the things that we know are most important. So thank you, Senator Rest.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I hate to sound like somebody who is for whom money burns a hole in their pocket, but sometimes, and I know that that's what you're trying to protect from, if there were some way, did you give thought to the idea of dedicating, obviously legislators have a hard time doing that and keeping it, or even a constitutional dedication of portion of that surplus for spending on projects. Part of the challenge we have is that we need those infusions, and you would have a substantial amount that you could put in every time you had that. And the nice part of an infrastructure type of challenge, which is what we are facing, is that, you know, if you don't have, there's a certain amount of sustainability you need, but there's also there's some great needs that need to be spent now. Did you think at all about that in terms of some way of capturing that for infrastructure rather than other kinds of things that we might do with that money?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, well, yes, of course. It occurred to me that, well, there's a real pendulum that goes here. But my first thought was take the whole $1 billion and put it in a trust fund. Why stop at 25% of it? We have great needs there, and if we put it all in there and had a 5% or maybe even higher than that, we could have $100 million. Let's say a 10% return. We could have $100 million to spend on transportation, including transit projects, and yet the money would not go away. And when it'd be there, the corpus would grow. We could add to it in the future. And it's very fiscally conservative approach, I hope you appreciate. The other side of that is take the whole billion and spend it this year, and on transportation. And that's where you get into this argument about where are the priority needs for spending of the one-time money, that I was trying to take that discussion off the table with regard to transportation and come up with a new, it's not a new model in the sense of an endowment fund, but a new approach to using it from the one-time surplus money. And the most fiscally conservative thing to do would be to put the whole thing into an endowment fund of some sort, and then regardless of whether it was spent in transportation or in any other area of budget need, that we only spent only appropriated the earnings on that fund, but that seems to me because needs are so great that's not a possibility. But taking a portion of it seemed to me to be a reasonable request for consideration.
Thank you. Right. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rest. I also am very appreciative of this plan. And but if the one thing that I just would like to ask you about is, of course, the rejection of the rebate plan, Section 9 of the bill. Are you suggesting a rejection of that plan for this biennium? Okay, and then but then the 25% ongoing for future bienniums. The rejection is for this biennium.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Koch, yes, and that's, I mean, we could, I didn't want to, this bill is not a bill repealing the opportunity to offer a rebate.
Okay.
But in order to effectuate this bill, you'd have to reject rebate for this year. So I appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address Senate File 228? Seeing none, thank you. And Senator Rest, my first blush reaction is this is a way to take one-time money, make it ongoing, or a small part of it ongoing money. So, and I appreciate the creativity of the idea and the opportunity to consider it as we try to put together a package for the full committee to propose. So Senator Rest moves Senate File 228 as amended be laid on the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All in favor? Oh, that's right. We're not doing motions. Okay. I did fail to ask if anyone wanted to speak from the audience who wasn't already signed up on the previous bills. So if anyone does want to do that when we're done with the next bill, just let me know and you can approach the table. So we are going to go to our final bill on the agenda, which is Senate File 223, Senator Stephen. High-speed rail. Welcome, Senator Stephen.
Thank you, Chair Dibble. First, members, I'd like to move the A1 amendment, I believe it is. And this amendment, just for clarification, would get the bill in the shape that I would prefer. For members, for their knowledge, it also designates that the route used in the appropriation request would be the route that's designated by the Federal Railroad Administration, which would connect St. Paul via La Crescent, Winona, and Red Wing, and Chicago.
Great, thank you. Senator Stephen offers the A1 amendment. This is the Committee of Original Jurisdiction and the bill's first hearing. Any questions on the amendment? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Amendment passes. Senator Stephen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This request is part of the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative, which is a plan for a 3,000-mile high-speed rail system that would provide passenger rail services throughout 9 states using a hub system based in Chicago. And this $10 million request would fund the environmental and engineering work for high-speed passenger rail, the high-speed passenger rail corridor located in Minnesota. There are many, many benefits to making this type of investment, including increased efficiencies and economies of scale. The trains that would run between Chicago and St. Paul, there would be approximately 5 trains per day instead of the existing 1 train that is run between Chicago and St. Paul. Additionally, the travel time would be reduced from approximately 9 hours to 5.5 hours because the train would be able to reach speeds of up to 110 miles per hour. And there would be additional, once the plan is implemented, there would also be bus connections within other areas of Minnesota, including Duluth, St. Cloud, and Rochester. So with that, I think I would like to first ask Commissioner Myra Peterson to testify. Commissioner Peterson is from Washington County and a great transit advocate for the state of Minnesota.
Welcome, Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Senator Stephen. And thank you, Senator Dibble. This, of course, is what we call the little engine that could, that would. In the mid-1990s, there was a very strong advocacy group at the state of Minnesota for high-speed rail and for rail transportation as a whole. During the last few years, that department has been reduced. The need and the want and the desire of the public has not been reduced. And there is a strong focus in Minnesota, people who do want to use rail. If I look at what's going on in Wisconsin, I am woefully ashamed of what we're doing in Minnesota. We look at the cost of gasoline, the cost of our fuel products. They continue to rise. And there is but one choice. We have to find ways that will take people and move them into places. And we need to look at that cost of fuel. This is, I think, one of the ways that as we go forward, each county along this corridor can make investments for rail improvement to accommodate 110 miles per hour rather than making rail improvements to only handle freight train. So this is a great program, and Senator Stephen's bill certainly puts it on the table. We have support from our county. We have support from all of the counties in Minnesota down to, I've lost the name of the city. La Crescent. Thank you. So we find this to be a very positive Midwest rail system, and we think it should go forward. I would like to mention that we have Lee Haugen from the St. Paul City Council was here. He had to leave. And we also have support from the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce on this.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. Who would you like next, Senator Steven?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps we could hear next from Commissioner Rafael Ortega from Ramsey County.
Welcome, Commissioner Ortega.
Thank you, Senator, and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you about high-speed rail. About 4 or 5 years ago, when in federal legislation, St. Paul was and the Union Depot were identified as the terminus for high-speed rail from Chicago, we came before the Senate Transportation Committee to talk about high-speed rail. And we were told it was a state issue and not a county, so it was odd that the county was requesting money for high-speed rail. But we clearly looked at it as sort of keeping it on the radar screen, because we know that even at that time, states like Wisconsin, under both Republican and Democratic administrations, were investing in actually putting rail on the ground. We have not been participating at these Midwest coalition meetings to the extent that we should as a state. We have, of course, as a county, are investing quite a bit of money on the Union Depot. We're on the verge of acquiring the concourse and the post office property. We have the Central Corridor moving forward. We're now beginning the Robert Street studies for that alignment. The Rush Line is already moving ahead with alternative analysis. So there are a lot of things going on, and except for the Robert Street Corridor, all of these corridors have been, and of course Red Rock, have been federally authorized and appropriated dollars. And we're in the process, and they all come to the depot. So it only makes sense in that we have the high speed coming into the depot. And so we really appreciate that Senator Sieben is really bringing this and putting it up front on the agenda, because it's very critical. And as a state, and only the state of Minnesota could actively participate in this Midwest region. And again, we cannot be left behind, because, you know, the days when we could ignore not being connected to our region is something we can't afford. It's about the next 50 years, the next 100 years. It isn't about the next 10 years. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Questions for Commissioner Ortega. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, looking around the table, I'm probably the only one that is old enough to have taken the train from Minneapolis and through St. Paul Union Depot to Chicago.
Spring break trips, Mr. Chair, excuse me.
But when I was in college my freshman year down in that area, I made numerous trips back and forth from that area, and I think that I'm glad to see this is hopefully it's on a fast track to get there and get that done, because I think that would be exceptional. You probably would get there faster than you would for all the time you waited at an airport to at either end to use the air transport, much less driving. But I've kind of had lost track of discussion. A few years ago, it seemed to me that the discussion about high-speed rail here in Minnesota was a connection between here and Rochester. Is that now? I realize that route. I know where the tracks go from the old history. They go along the either the Wisconsin or the Minnesota side of the river, rather than through. And that probably would go outside of your district, Senator Sieben, if that route were changed. But how does that fit into the? Does Rochester fit into any scheme relative to the high-speed rail as well?
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, that's a good question. Under this current plan, Rochester would be connected by bus, and a stop would be in Winona, so people from Rochester would connect there. There has been some discussion about alternating the route to go south down to Rochester instead of along the river. However, Minnesota is part of the Midwest Regional Rail Compact, and that compact defined that the route, and this was done a couple years ago, defined the route as the current route as is stated in this bill. I mean, I know that Rochester wants to be included, and I think that speaks to the overwhelming need for the state to have a transit system that includes all area of the state. So I've said to the folks from Rochester and my colleagues from Rochester that, you know, we're very willing to help support other transit lines that connect Rochester via train. It's just not this bill.
And Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Ortega, I just commend the city of St. Paul for hanging on to the depot. it used to leave either from the Great Northern or the Milwaukee Road. Well, the Great Northern's been long gone in Minneapolis, and the Milwaukee Road would probably be hard to resurrect into a train station, but you have that capability, so I think that would be a real asset to St. Paul to become a hub here and have that that location.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we are in the verge of Ramsey County over the last 4 or 5 years have slowly acquired all the property that is necessary to get the depot, to bring back the depot. Where the piece that's missing, of course, is the concourse that's owned by the post office. And I could tell you right now that the news that I just received, as a matter of fact, I was with the mayor, and we were jointly attending some public events, and I got a call from the post office. We're on the verge of really, when I come before you next year, we're actually ready to start constructing, because you know we do have $50 million from the federal government that was given to Ramsey County for the Union Depot 2 years ago, and that money is there for us to start utilizing to, you know, go through all the steps.
Great.
Thank you. Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I just wanted to add to that this route, as designated under this bill, makes improvement in the existing rail lines, and that obviously brings improved economies of scale to the Red Rock corridor, which, as both commissioners mentioned, is critically important for the Union Depot. I mean, I think our vision up here is that we have a transit system that serves the entire metropolitan area, and the danger here is that if the high-speed rail, for instance, or the rush line do not come into the Union Depot, then transit opportunities are sort of lost on the East Metro, and you know, that is also one reason why we've been pushing for this bill so hard this session, is that we want to be equal partners with our friends on the other side of the river and make sure that both sides of the metropolitan area are seeing improved investments in transportation. I think it also speaks, and this isn't lost on any of us here, but it also speaks to the really increased need for overall transportation funding, so that we're not fighting against corridor, but so that legislators and transit advocates are pushing for transportation options throughout the metropolitan area.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Stephen, where is the Red Rock corridor alignment? Is it the same line? So that technically the commuter rail could benefit from the same level of upgrade of the rail for the high speed.
Senator Stephen.
That's Mr. Chair and Senator Olson. That's correct. And Commissioner Peterson can add more about the details.
Actually, as we made the investments to improve the Wakota Bridge, we made our bridges wider so that we can accommodate another lane of rail transportation if it's necessary. But any investment made along that corridor will enhance both freight, commuter rail, and high-speed rail.
Okay. Great. That's good.
Thank you. Yes, that's good. Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stephen, I look forward to taking the commuter rail from Minnetonka through downtown Minneapolis and then getting on the Central Corridor rail to the Union Depot and going on to Chicago.
Minnetonka to Chicago. All right. The Minnetonka-Chicago Express. All right. Senator Stephen, you have another witness.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And first, I'd just also like to add that the $10 million request is unfortunately just part of the initial engineering money that will be needed. The total request for engineering design will, we just got new numbers from MnDOT, and will need to be about $30 million. But at this time, we're just asking for the $10 million appropriation. Mr. Chair, our next witness is Jeff Hazen from the Sierra Club North Star chapter.
Welcome, Mr. Hazen.
Mr. Chair, Senators, we first want to thank Senator Sieben for sponsoring this series of bills and whoever else is involved as well in transportation and transit. Nationally, the Sierra Club has the last few years focused on a couple of main things that impact the environment and the people. There are millions of little things that involve environmental issues and its related impact on people. They tend to boil down mainly to energy, and transportation is a big part of that. And so we are strongly supportive of the state's efforts to finance participation in the creation of intercity passenger rail of all the kinds. We've heard about it. It's not a state thing. Totally, it's regional, and from my introduction, and it's only an introduction to this area, it seems as though Minnesota is woefully underrepresented in the discussion. And so, in fact, there's a one of many, perhaps, but one Midwest Regional High-Speed Rail Association, where there is meeting in Chicago. You take the train to get there. And to talk about the connection of a 9 or 10 state regional high-speed rail line, which we are strongly in favor of. The other thing that the club wants to mention is that the choice of the routes is a ways down the line. We think that it should be left to a process that includes all of the stakeholders and that it shouldn't necessarily be locked into legislation at this point, since there are lots of participants, lots of pieces of the puzzle that need to be put together before necessarily we could say that one particular route or series of routes is best. The club hasn't decided what the best one is. We encourage the funding and the continued dialogue amongst everybody involved, and so that together the final details, including the location of the routes and the station designs and the transit and whatever that can support it, at those points, we would suggest it would be the time to decide on a route.
Thank you, Mr. Hazen. Any questions for Mr. Hazen from the committee? No. Okay, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next, Mike Rogers from Washington County would like to make some comments.
Thank you, Senator.
Welcome, Mr.
Chair,
Rogers.
Senators. My name is Mike Rogers. I'm a transportation planner for Washington County. I work on this and the Red Rock Corridor and a lot of the other transit corridors for Washington County. I think an important piece to mention on this is that Wisconsin has been light years ahead of Minnesota, unfortunately, in getting their piece of the high-speed corridor going. They have more than just the Empire Builder right now between Milwaukee and Chicago, I believe. They have 6 or 7 additional trains on what they call their Hiawatha line that runs many more trains on a better schedule, more efficient on-time performance of about 98%. That ridership on those trains is going to grow about 10% a year. They've also purchased track between Madison and Milwaukee to extend that piece of their high-speed corridor and completed their environmental impact statement. So as soon as federal money becomes available, essentially Wisconsin can add that segment so they can have Madison, Milwaukee, and Chicago hooked up to high-speed rail. I believe, if I'm recalling right, they're actually looking at putting bonding in this year, so they would have a ready source of funding for matching those federal funds when they show up. In talking to representatives from their Department of Transportation, they are just waiting for Minnesota to come along and get some environmental work going so they can start their process from La Crosse to Madison. They don't see as much of a need to start that until Minnesota gets going for the full-blown connection to the Twin Cities. So I just think it's important to let the committee know about where Wisconsin's at. And on the Illinois side, they have been adding trains to many downstate routes to St. Louis, to Carbondale, to get better service on those routes, so to take them from one train a day to more, and they're in the process of upgrading track between Chicago and St. Louis to increase the speed on those trains.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Rogers? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rogers, light years ahead of us?
Light years.
Describe that.
What I mean is,
how long really is that? You said they haven't even done any environmental work waiting for us, so what is
it? On the La Crosse segment, say the La Crosse to Madison, they haven't, because they're waiting for it. What they've done is they've completed their environmental work on Madison to Milwaukee, so all they need is capital funds to show up, and they can start building that project to add those trains, whereas we're still sitting waiting to try and get environmental dollars so we can begin our environmental process, which is probably a 2 to 3 year process, just to get to the point where where Wisconsin was a couple years ago, and they have purchased track. So they'll be the ones controlling the trains on certain sections as opposed to some of the freight. So they're probably a decade ahead on certain pieces.
So Mr. Chairman, that's what how long a light year is? I just, my education was incomplete, and I was trying to get a picture of what a light year was.
I think it's safe to say, Senator Olson, that Wisconsin is fully engaged and has mobilized a lot of its political will and put its resources,
Mr. Chairman, I just hate to see Minnesota disparage. I know we may be dragging a little bit, but we lead on a lot of things, too, so I don't want to let Wisconsin get by with that.
Well, we'll give them this one. And I was down in St. Louis. I serve on soon-to-be-replaced by Senator Sieben and Bonhoff on the kind of the legislators, kind of the public officials piece that promotes this idea throughout the upper Midwest. They were very excited down in St. Louis because they were just about to open up, or I don't know, I think they just had opened up the addition of trains and service between St. Louis and Chicago. And since then, I continue to get emails from that neck of the woods that says that they're already filling up those trains and looking at how to add more.
It's
high speed rail. Is it high speed? It's fast. I don't know if it's the 110 mile. I think it's
not the
90
mile. It's not the 110 mile, Mr. Chair, Senators, mm-hmm. but it's improved service more than anything, is that mm-hmm. you don't now have to catch the 6:30 train to, mm-hmm. and then spend the night in Chicago just to get a train that comes back at a decent time. Yeah. So
and I recently drove from Chicago to Madison, Ben Brouse's hometown, and would have done anything to be in a train because that was some serious gridlock traffic all the way from Chicago to Madison. It was bad news. But, yeah, Wisconsin is, believe it or not, putting in trains, buying track, doing design work, and I think we've managed to date, despite a lot of talk about this, put in a couple $1 million in a bonding bill a couple of years ago to begin talking about this idea. So, Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. We no longer have a department that is engaged at MnDOT. And that's, we have to engage MnDOT to start focusing on trains being an integral part of our transportation program.
Great. Thank you. Senator Rest.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That comment is a segue into a request that I'm going to make, and that is that we go ahead and pass this bill back up to the full committee so that can be sent to my subcommittee so that other members of the Transportation Committee who are engaged in railways, waterways, and airways also take on this project. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move that.
I think Senator Sieben is a member of the committee. She can. She knows about the request.
Yes, so I understand. She does.
Right. So anything further from the committee? Anything from the audience on this bill? Oh, Mr. Van Hattem, please approach.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dave Van Hattem. I'm with Transit for Livable Communities. We're a local nonprofit with over 9,000 supporters throughout the metro. And we've historically advocated for much greater investment in transit, in particularly in metro transit. We have had a proposal in play called Transportation Choices 2020, which in the past has included the high-speed rail initiative. This go-around, we've taken it off that menu to really shine the light as bright as possible on metro transit needs. And the Transportation Choice 2020 is a statewide comprehensive transit proposal. But I do want to note Transit for Livable Communities' strong support for Senate File 223 and the High Speed Rail Initiative for all the reasons you've heard this morning or this afternoon. But just to maybe highlight a couple of things, ridership, as we've seen in the metro through Senator Bonhoeff's presentation, ridership is up greatly in this corridor between these multiple states. And one other state, my home state of Michigan, has made a major investment in this initiative as well, over $25 million to date. The Wisconsin proposal, the governor's proposal there, is $80 million for this initiative. And we just think it's the way to go to increase our economic competitiveness for the environmental benefits. The numbers we find are that this system would use about be three times as efficient as car travel. So it's an alternative to congestion. It's a wise investment for the region, and we strongly support this bill.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Van Hattem? Nope. All right. Anything further from the audience on Senate File 223? Senator Sieben, you have a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I move that Senate File 223 as amended be recommended to pass and referred back to the Committee on Transportation.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
Yes. All right.
And Mr. Chairman, in doing that, making that official, then I can request that Senator Murphy send it to the other subcommittee.
Correct. Great. Thanks. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion passes. Okay, I promise to invite members of the audience to speak to us about the previous three bills because I failed to do so previously. So is anything further on the previous three bills? Please approach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Erin Sexton with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate the opportunity to hop on the end of your agenda. I just briefly wanted to state some support for Senate File 190, Senator Bonhoeff's bill. I think in the same vein that we dedicated the motor vehicle sales tax to transportation, it makes sense to dedicate the motor vehicle sales tax on leased vehicles in that same manner. So I just wanted to state our support for that legislation.
Great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Sexton. Anything for Ms. Sexton? Nope. All right. So members, I'm not sure, other than, of course, our field hearings, when exactly the next transit subcommittee will meet, but we will endeavor to have the next meeting soon. We'll have a larger discussion about what our recommendation is going to be to the full transportation committee, though I don't really know exactly when we're going to ripen up a full bill, so maybe there'll be a couple more meetings. So with that, look forward to seeing you on the road and our world as our world tour continues. Anything further from the committee? We're adjourned.